A king dies. His elected regent follows soon after, and the AmaZulu throne is left empty as siblings prepare for a power tussle.
Breaking news right now, news just coming in. His Majesty, the King of the Zulu Nation, King Goodwill Zwelithini, has died.
Zulu warriors bid farewell to the only king most of them have ever known.
South Africa's Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini has died.
More about our breaking story this morning, Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini has died.
Well, let's start with that breaking news story. AmaZulu King Goodwill Zwelithini has passed away.
The spear of the AmaZulu nation and its longest reigning monarch, His Majesty King Goodwill Gabego Zulu, died from a diabetes-related complication on the morning of the 12th of March in 2021. King Zwelithini was the eighth monarch of the Zulu nation and ruled for 53 years from 1968 until his death in 2021. But the king could not have foreseen the turmoil his death would cause to South Africa, the AmaZulu people, or for his own family. Welcome to the Royal Rumble, a short podcast series brought to you by Irina Holdings. This series is dedicated to celebrating the AmaZulu monarchy and its traditions, while unraveling the complicated power dynamics associated with traditional succession and leadership battles. In this first episode of our three-part series, The Death of a Monarch, we focus on the significance of traditional leadership and the contradictory parallel existence of a constitutional democracy and a traditional monarchy within South Africa. South Africa already has a president, so why do its various clans need traditional rulers or kings? What authority and sway is associated with the title of the King of the Zulus? How is the succession decided? And what ramifications lie in wait if traditional king's authority is questioned? Or worse still, if it's unclear who the real king actually is? As it stands, three of King Goodwill's sons have been nominated by various family members to fulfill the top spot as King of the Zulu Nation. Two of the three brothers have just a week apart undergone ukungena esibayeni, known in English as entering the crown ceremony, which acts as a traditional coronation ceremony. This means that two kings have been crowned, while members of the royal family gave a very public briefing supporting the only prince up for succession who has not yet undergone the ukungena esibayeni ceremony. I am your host, Amanda Khoza, and together we will journey into the heart of the Zululand. Many, even within the borders of South Africa, don't understand the importance of the Zulu monarchy in customary society. While South Africa calls itself a constitutional democracy, meaning that the country is governed by principles set out by a constitution and ruled by a regularly elected leader, the concept of democracy is a new one. And for many, it's a concept that arrived with white colonials. Professor Sehao Ngubane, a lecturer at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and the author of Death and Burial Practices in Contemporary Zulu Culture, explains to us how democracy came to replace traditional leadership in South Africa.
In my opinion, it did not replace the traditional leadership per se. You will recall that in 1910, the British or the Afrikaners constituted the Union of South Africa. And the transition to democracy came about as an alternative to apartheid. You know that we've been under the British supremacy, and then later it was Afrikaners. And the introduction of democracy in 1994 was to bring about change in terms of governance. So it did not replace the traditional leadership, because the traditional leadership started as early as in the 17th century, and it is still in existence to date. So it has never been replaced. But what happened when democracy was adopted, the role of the traditional leadership was compromised or marginalized by the new dispensation of democracy. But the intention was to create a government that reflected the country's diversity and transforming from white supremacy into the new order.
The title of the King of the Zulu Nation is not a position to be taken lightly. While democracy has reigned in South Africa for just over a quarter of a century, the Zulu monarchy has been successfully mobilizing a large portion of the South African population for over 8 centuries, and arguably more successfully.
Its relevance is to keep people connected to the ground, to their ancestors, and also to practice their culture, as it is promoted in the constitution of South Africa, that people must enjoy their culture. So I think if we have AmaZulu, their culture will remain for many years to come, and their languages will remain for many years to come. The monarchy is the custodian of language. So if there are new developments or innovations to the language, they are the people who lead that dialogue as to which of the new words or terminology that can be coined or adopted by the nation. And more so, I think there is the authority figure for identity of the Zulu people. We know that the Zulu nation has got a long history, over 200 years in existence, and the Zulu people are scattered all over South Africa, even beyond. You find people in Zimbabwe speaking isiZulu who are Zulu people from the Nguni group. So it has been the role of the monarch to unite all these people that are of Zulu descendants.
The role of king instantly offers the holder sway over national politics, respect, loyalty, and adoration from the biggest Nguni tribe in South Africa. Today, it's estimated that there are more than 45 million South Africans, and the Zulu people make up approximately 22% of this number. The AmaZulu king is broadly accepted to speak for this demographic. He's also entitled to government benefits worth more than 60 million rand per year and a vast amount of traditional land. Because of the power and influence associated with this title, proper, peaceful, and undisputed succession to the throne is essential, not only for the Zulu people, but for peace throughout the country. But peaceful succession is not an easy thing to achieve. Polygamy is traditionally accepted and remains a common practice within the AmaZulu culture. King Goodswillitini himself had 6 wives and 28 children, only one of which has the right to be called king.
According to the Zulu custom and tradition, in a polygamous setup, I think we have a principle of how a king should be appointed to ascend the throne. Maybe I should just start from here that if you are a king, you are expected to have more than one wife. So most of the Zulu king and African kings are polygamous. And the first wife is responsible for producing the heir to the family. But the second wife cannot have an heir. The third wife could, and then the fourth wife cannot. In other words, all the odd numbers can have an heir to the throne. The queen that is responsible to beget an heir should be paid by the nation. So all amakhosi contribute to the ilobola. And then when a child comes and is a male child, then that child becomes an heir, to sit on the throne if anything happens to the father. I think that's the legitimacy of the son, who is the firstborn son, to sit on the throne. So this is how it happens. There are other queens that Lobola was paid for, by the king, not by the nation. Like the first wife, Lobola was paid by the king himself, and the other wives that he had were paid by himself. So there's only one queen whose Lobola was paid by the nation, and that queen is responsible for producing the next king. I think the other thing that is also considered is that the queen must come from a royal family. So there are two royal bloods to the heir, because from the mother's side, the queen comes from the royal family and the child is from the royal family. So he has two powers that are sacred from both royal families. And initially, the intention to take a queen from the other royal family was to promote a friendship.
King Gudwelitini, who was sometimes known to be a controversial character, was for the most part a well-respected and loved leader.
The provincial government, through the premier, has requested His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa to declare a state funeral for His Majesty the King. As the province, we declare this whole week as a week for mourning, meaning all government and private functions must be suspended.
It's difficult to express how you feel about this, because this has been a tragic thing that has happened to us, especially to the royal family and to the entire Zulu nation.
When our premier Zikalala called me to give me the sad news, followed up by a telephone conversation with Ubaba Hushenge, sadness also descended upon me.
He knew the power that this position entailed and was well aware that improper succession risked the safety and security of his nation, his people, and his family. King Gudwelitini himself was forced into hiding for 3 years after his own father's death because of a myriad of death threats that he received before ascending to the throne. In his will, King Gudwelitini left a regent in place in the event of his death, and this was to help usher in the Zulu nation's next great monarch. But even the king's best laid out plans sometimes go awry. Our eyes and ears on the ground in the heart of Zululand is Sunday Times political reporter and KwaZulu-Natal correspondent Zimbasa Madiwan. She has followed this story personally since the death of the king. Zimbasa, who was the king's appointed regent?
You know, I'm reluctant to say authoritatively that the king, the late king, appointed a regent, because the will that had put Queen Mantombi as a regent has been questioned so many times, and you know, there are accusations of forgery around it. And if I remember correctly, in July, around the 7th of July, there was a report that came out from SAPS that indeed the signature of the late King Goodwill Zwelithini was forged on that will. So that is why I'm reluctant to say that he is the one who appointed a regent. However, you know, despite the will and the signatures and who the regent is and who is not supposed to be the regent, she remains the great wife, because she is the only wife out of the six who comes from royalty. She's the daughter of King Sobhuza, of Eswatini. She is the sister of King Moswati from Eswatini. So that is what made her the great wife. That is what makes her unique from the rest of the wives.
As regent, Queen Mandombi Dlamini was intended to be the final word on the naming of the new monarch and hold the throne until succession could be settled. But the great wife unexpectedly died on April 29 in 2021, just a little over a month after the king. There have been a lot of rumors around her death, but what do we know for sure? What happened? What did she die of?
What came out when the queen died was that there were some liver issues, you know, and at her funeral, her daughter, Princess Bukosibemvelo, who took care of her, tried to explain it. However, I mean, she never mentioned the diagnosis, and in a lot of black households, you don't see, you know, someone explaining, you know, that this is what killed our mother, this is what, you know, happened. But she painted a picture of a long-term sickness that you know, had attacked her mother. She never named it, and she took care of her, so she was able to explain how it was painful seeing her mother go through, you know, that sickness and being in pain. And you know, eventually there was some rumors of a liver, problematic liver, but there was no explanation of what was wrong with her liver and what was found, you know, in the post-mortem, what the cause of death was. So we remain in the dark. However, remaining in the dark is normal for the black community. Usually the cause of death is a matter that concerns the family only.
Ngubane has explained that in Zulu culture, like in most, the throne typically belongs to the oldest biological son of the king. This means that King Goodswillitini's oldest son should ascend to the throne, right?
You know, every king that has ever sat on the Zulu throne has had to fight for it. It's not something that is given to you. You have to somehow prove, you know, with whoever supports you and whatever power they have, and you have to fight off whoever else wants it, because remember, it's about power. Previously it was about power, it was about expansion, it was about territory, you know, but now it's about power, it's about influence, it's about money. So it was bound to come to a point where we have the family divided over who should ascend. Because, you know, at the end of the day, people are looking after their own interests.
King Goodswillitini's oldest son is Prince Magade Gazwelitin. While born out of wedlock, this technicality is not a problem in Zulu culture. This means that ordinarily, Prince Magade would be crowned king, simply for being the oldest son. But Regent Queen Mandombi Dlamini, who was the third wife, was royalty in her own right, meaning she was a queen consort. After traditional upbringing in the Swati royal family, a young Princess Dlamini was betrothed to King Goodswillitini in 1973. At the time of their betrothal, she was a member of the royal family of a sovereign state. As a result, the Eswatini palace laid a steep condition for the marriage. The princess was to become the king's great wife. This was a position that would give her male children first place in the line of succession. The Zulu palace agreed, and the couple married in 1977. This means that despite the fact that Regent Queen Mandombi Dlamini's oldest son, Prince Misu Zulu Zulu, is the seventh oldest prince, as the first son of the great wife, he has a very strong claim to the throne. But two contenders for the throne just isn't dramatic enough. The fourth son of King Goodswillitini's second wife, Prince Buzabazi, known as Buza Kazwelithini, has also had his name added to the running.
This is our time to say, as the ruling family in the Zulu royal family, we are here to elaborate and tell people of South Africa, people of KwaZulu-Natal, what is happening, what has been happening, and what is our goal, what we intend to do.
We've got the name, we chose the name of Buzabazi Kazwelithini. The family knows maybe why, but it's only that someone is being dividing, I don't know what to say, but he's dividing these kids not to trust one another.
Not due to a particular strong succession right, but rather by popular demand. Members of the Zulu royal family have suggested that Prince Buzabazi was in fact being trained by King Kgotsweletini himself to take over the throne. Some within the family claim that Prince Buzabazi was intended as the next ruler. It seems like everything really went off the rails with the death of Queen Mantombi Dlamini, the regent. Traditionally, the role of a regent is to govern a state or people for the time being, because the monarch is a minor, is absent, incapacitated, or unable to discharge the powers and duties of the monarchy, or the throne is vacant and the new monarch has not yet been determined. But without a regent, the throne has been left empty and the family is at loggerheads as to who exactly should rule the Zulu people. On the 30th of August, a faction of the AmaZulu royal family traditionally crowned Prince Magate, who is the oldest son of King Kgotsweletini, as the king of the Zulu nation. People gathered at Enyogeni Palace for Prince Magate's ukungena esibayeni, known as entering the kraal ceremony.
And you know, these kraal entering ceremonies, they are describing them in different ways. But ultimately, the significance of it culturally is that when one enters the kraal, they burn impepho, they speak to the ancestors, and amabutho will be there, you know, and the family elders will be there. And when the individual comes out, they start calling him Bayede, you know, when I was Zulu, and that person culturally is then recognized as a king. So that has been done for Princess Magade. It's being done for King Musuzulu this weekend. So basically where that puts us is that we have two kings going forward and a third pending one.
This is despite other members of the royal house and government officially recognizing his younger brother and the son of the great wife, Queen Mantombi Dlamini. This is Prince Misuzulu as the leader of the nation. However, royal family members supporting Prince Magate's claim say only they can appoint a king and they do not recognize Prince Misuzulu. But Zimasa, Prince Misuzulu traditionally seems to have a stronger claim. Why are some of the members of the family hesitant to support him?
And I think, you know, within the family, there were people who thought, no, we mourn for a year, we do this ritual, we do that ritual before we even, you know, speak about who should take over. And there were people who thought, no, our candidate is, you know, the rightful heir. Nobody's going to fight us on this guy because of ABC. But there were also people who saw gaps, you know, within those roots and said, well, we can quickly take advantage here and here and push this and this candidate. But what's important is that at the moment there are three candidates. when you listen to the arguments from the three different factions that support them, they sound legitimate to me, at least. So it's a long road ahead. It's going to be definitely difficult to come to a concession of some sort, because also remember, these people do not speak to each other. So I believe the last time they were together was during Queen Mandombe's funeral, and that was, you know, probably 4 months after the king had died. So any efforts that have been made to bring them together to, you know, at least communicate and speak and, you know, try and find a solution has not yielded any positive results. So they are pulling in three different directions at this moment. However, there is a king on the throne that has been recognized by the government, and there are, you know, court proceedings, interdicts that, you know, seek to stop the coronation from taking place. And meanwhile, there are other candidates that are being advanced, you know, by different groupings. So time will tell, but it from where I'm sitting, it doesn't look like something that would be solved, you know, amicably. It's sort of like a winner takes all, you know, situation. So we'll see.
Princess Zulu is set to undergo the very same entering of the crown ceremony today on the 20th of August, just 1 week after his older brother, Prince Smagate. Practically, this means that from today, there are two kings of the Zulu nation. But to complicate matters further, 2 days before the coronation of Prince Mzuzulu Kazwelithini, Prince Mathube Sizwe Zulu, the brother of the late King Zwelithini, announced that Prince Buzabazi Kazwelithini had been chosen by the late king's siblings as the next king of the Zulu nation. Prince Mathube Sizwe even went as far as saying that the princes have lost their way and know better than to try and undertake these sacred ceremonies without consent.
Our sons are lost because they are not supposed to get into the crawl, let alone that they are doing it without our consent. But even they are in their mind, they know that they are not allowed to get into the crawl because they are not kings. They are not coronated, and they are getting lost, taken by the old people. I think the world knows who are those.
At a media briefing in Johannesburg on Thursday, Prince Mathube Sizwe Kabhekwe Zulu said only the deceased king's four brothers and sisters had the right to decide who should be the king of the Zulus. So who has the stronger right to rule? Who's king? The oldest son and the first to enter the kraal, Prince Smagate, the eldest son of the great wife, backed by the president, and second to make it into the kraal, Prince Mzuzulu, or the middle child who was supposedly being groomed to lead by his father and who has been supported by his uncle, Prince Buzabazi. In our next episode, we will tell you more about this battle for power. We will pull apart the succession arguments made by competing siblings. We will hear first-hand accounts from the royal family, listen in on leaked audio from discussions in the family, and do our best to untangle this legal argument made on a traditional matter. The question remains, who is the rightful king of the Zulu nation? Do courts or a president of a country get to decide who a people's traditional leader ought to be? Join me, Amanda Koza, for our next episode, A House Divided, as we find out the answers together.
You have been listening to Royal Rumble, a podcast original by Arena Holdings. If you enjoyed this form of storytelling, let us know by taking a second to drop us a review on your podcast streaming app. This will help others find this content. For more original Arena Holdings podcasts, check out the podcast tab on Times Live. Subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. voiced by Amanda Koza. Research for this podcast done by Demi Buzo and Zimasa Matewane. Scripting and sound design by Paige Muller. Thank you.